Hello and welcome to Culture Over Coffee, a podcast focused on improving company culture and fostering employee engagement. Every week we chat with experts and thought leaders about the latest information and proven practices you can use to reduce regrettable turnover, increase productivity on your team, and retain key customers. So pour a cup of your favorite brew and join us. I'm your host, Beth Sunshine, SVP at Up Your Culture and the Center for Sales Strategy. In this episode, we're continuing our focus on Engage 2023, our latest company culture and employee engagement report, by exploring the data related to valued voice. In this section of the report, we asked questions about the quality of communication and collaboration that employees are currently experiencing. Discussing these latest findings with me is the awesome Emily Estee, VP, Senior Consultant at the Center for Sales Strategy. Emily offers such great points to think about, like how normalizing communication makes employees feel that much more comfortable sharing their opinions. Why is there a difference between having a voice and having a vote? And finally, why understanding how your behavior affects the roles of others just might make a world of difference when it comes to the quality of interdepartmental communication. All right, Emily, thank you for joining me for this season of Culture Over Coffee. I've been really looking forward to this.
Me too.
Season, we're going to dig into the Engage 2023 Culture Report. We've been discussing all of the stories the data tells, and today I've been really looking forward to this topic. We're going to talk about the concept of valued voice, which is very cool and something that I think you are just the perfect person to talk to us on. The way we talk about valued voice, it's a key component in a strong culture. It's really about two-way communication. So first, it involves employees feeling as though their manager shares important information with them. But at the same time, it's about employees feeling as though their ideas and input are valuable as well. So I want to kind of tackle both sides of that equation as we talk a little bit today. You ready to get started?
I am. Yes. Thank you for having me.
So glad you're here. So glad you're here. All right. So I want to start by asking you just a really broad question. When you looked over the report, were there any stats or findings, anything that just jumped out at you related to valued voice that, you know, you want to share today?
Yeah, I think probably the thing that jumped out, and I know we'll talk about it a little bit further, but probably the thing that jumped out at me the most was the interdepartmental communication. And honestly, not only jumped out at me the most, but like scared me the most. Like that's just, it was, you know, if you look, add up both of the columns of either, you know, we're good, but could be better, or it's not very good at all. That's 77%. Yeah. That those two statistics together. And that was shocking to me. And I see that in my work. It's a thing, you know, like it's almost like, wow, interdepartments that do communicate well, it's like, oh, wow, how do you do that? So think about the bottlenecks, though, that creates. Think about the loss of time and efficiency that must create, though. I mean,
it's striking.
Yeah,
it really is a lot. It is a lot. And I know just with Up Your Culture, when we work with companies, it is often one of the reasons we get called in to help. So I wasn't surprised to see it. I know it's a pain point, but like you, I think it was one of the most striking statistics in the whole report for me.
It's almost like it's a given that departments don't get along. And I just think that mindset just antiquated. Like, come on. Like,
I agree. I agree. Yeah. And you're right. It's an expensive problem to have.
Yes.
And it keeps people from really being their best.
Wondering
that a little bit. Yeah. Okay. So let's go a little bit deeper. I mentioned just a second ago about that two-way street that comes with valued voice. And I want to start by talking about the information that's coming in and how much clarity people have on what's expected of them at work.
Right.
So the survey showed, and I'm sure you saw this, that only 60% of people feel fully informed. leaving 40% to need more information in order to do their jobs well. You work with a lot of different organizations, and I'm just curious, from your perspective, are you seeing or hearing this need for more information?
Yeah, and to take that statistic even further, 54% of AEs didn't feel that transparent, you know, didn't feel that they knew enough to do their job. I can speak from experience almost because of our own culture. And one of the basis of our culture is transparency.
That's right.
Transparency about all the things. And even if something's not transparent, I know that I could, you know, if something's not said, I know that I could ask one of our leadership and they would give me a transparent answer. Mm-hmm. So that's a trust thing. And I think if you as leadership aren't transparent, I think what that says to your team is we don't trust you.
I agree.
We do not trust you with this information. You are not trusted. And that's not a great feeling, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, we're given information and almost always our leadership will say, okay, this is internal information, you know, great, that's fine. But that basis, I think, is so important. So we need to know, we need our leaders to be transparent, and we need leaders to be able to define the why behind certain expectations. And then I also think the second part of the expectation is what's the accountability? Because it's really difficult to have an expectation if you don't have the accountability factor too. And that's where I see things really falling off. And that goes back to not holding people accountable because leadership doesn't have a great talent bank, or, you know, you can back that all the way up to them being afraid of people leaving because it's so hard to find people, like that whole thing. So I think people shy away from expectations because of the accountability piece.
So if you set expectations, then it's required for you to keep up with them and to make sure that people are living up to those expectations and hold them accountable. And if you don't, then people just, you assume they're going to do their best.
Right. They're going to do their best. And the expectation doesn't really have a lot of weight if I don't know what's going to happen positively or negatively.
Yeah.
Right. You fulfill this expectation. This is how we're going to hold you accountable in a positive way. Right. I mean, or if not, this is what we're going to do. So I think that communication, I think people want expectations. They want to know what's expected of them. They don't want that to be gray at all. So as leaders, I think really defining what that is a gift to people.
I agree. I used to have a manager a while back, long time ago, who I used to joke around and say that he would give me information on a needs to know basis. And I never need to know, apparently, because he would like eke out information, never wanting to give the big picture. And I kept thinking, if I had that bigger picture, if I knew truly what was expected of me, I could rise to the occasion so much better. I agree. I think people really want to know what's expected of them. So what do you recommend? How would you help managers do a better job of that, setting clear expectations and giving people the information they need to be successful, to reach a higher standard?
I think obviously be very clear about the expectation and not having, you know, I'll hear managers say all the time, like, well, they hit their budget, but, you know, a couple of the things that they got, the couple of reasons they did that because they were call-ins.
So it doesn't count.
I'm like, wait a second. So I think you have to be very clear, obviously, about the expectation, but not overload the expectation. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? You hit your, you hit budget, attendance, like, I don't know what those things
are. What are we measuring?
Right. What are you measuring? Mm-hmm. And also have expectations around those things that you want to see growth in, right? And that could be different for different people. Maybe somebody needs an expectation around new business development, and maybe somebody else needs an expectation about just hitting an overall budget or whatever that is. So I think different expectations for different people is smart. And I also think, you know, we need to limit those from like, you know, 3 to 4 expectations. We can't overload people because that's, you know, the spinning, that's the different bells going off, and we don't want too many bells.
And based on what you said a moment ago, as a manager, you might actually be able to hold people accountable to a more manageable number. Right. Makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's flip that over, look at the other side of this. So a lot of people reported feeling that their opinions don't matter at work. So it's not about getting information. Now it's about their manager being open to hearing from them. And one of the numbers that jumped off to me was 1 in every 3 employees and 1 in every 4 managers feel that their opinions don't matter. Well, first, let me just ask you, what is your take on that?
I think people feel, and I would say, I don't know if this is true or not, but, you know, coming out of the pandemic, thinking about the hybrid work environment or not hybrid work environment, or there's been a little bit of a disparity between people being heard, their needs and what's working for them and what managers want. This doesn't really surprise me right now. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, geez, it kind of breaks my heart. Like feeling like, oh, my voice doesn't matter. Like I could say what I feel. So I think there's something that I love that I talk to managers about a lot. And that's the difference between having a voice and having a vote.
Mm.
And we want our team to have a voice for sure. But we also want it known on what things they actually have a vote on and what things they don't, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because a lot of times if you're asking your team how they feel about something, it's important to put that disclaimer out there. Like, I want to hear from you, but I'm the one that's ultimately going to make the decision. Mm-hmm. But it is important for me to have your input. A lot of times I think AEs confuse that. They think, oh, if I have a voice, that means I'm making the decision.
Right.
And that's, and so then they feel like they're not heard because management didn't go with their opinion or what, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think it's important for managers to be very clear on what they're asking for, mm-hmm. and what that means as far as, is this, do I have a vote here? Or are you just asking for my voice? Are you just asking for me to speak up and give my opinion? I think that's important that you be very clear about that.
Everybody has a voice. Not everybody has a vote. I like that a lot. And you're right. As a leader, hearing all of the voices can be impactful in making the decision. But if you set up expectations up front, that I'm seeking input, doesn't mean I'm going to go in that direction.
Right.
You're right. It sets the stage for a better outcome.
Yeah.
That's a good tip.
Yeah.
How can organizations, besides that, you might even have some other ideas, just get better at seeking and valuing employee input so people know that their voice really does matter?
Yeah, I think continually asking where we can improve. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's, maybe you have a quarterly town hall, or you have a quarterly, you have those culture meetings. You ask us to help mm-hmm. you with that. Like, let's figure out what, especially those organizations that have new managers or new ownership or any of those sorts of things where culture can really kind of be turned over, or mm-hmm. it's a huge opportunity to lay down culture.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, asking, having some sort of regular, like, self-improvement meeting, self-improvement input or town hall or something like that, where you can gather people's opinions, expression, you know, feelings, all of those sorts of things. You have to take action on some of those things. Right. But I think it's normalizing the behavior that I think is important. Like, we normalize that we want to hear what you have to say. So, you know, you schedule out those town hall meetings and you have 4 of them a year. Everybody knows they're coming. You know, you have a state of the state meeting, much like we do. You know, anything like that, I think, is really, really important.
I agree. At our state of the state meeting, we do something that I think a lot of companies do. Tell me what you think about this. We ask all of our employees to submit questions if they have them in advance, so that they don't have to say them out loud, but they know that their voice is valued, and then they get answered during the meeting.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you're seeing other companies do?
A little bit. I don't think people are as oh, what is the word that I'm looking for? They don't have a routine around it, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
We have a routine around that.
Right.
Some companies do, but I don't think there's a routine around it. It's not normalized behavior. So then when you're like, oh, they're asking my opinion, should I give it? I don't know. They've never asked my opinion before. I don't know how that's going to be used against me. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. But if
you're normalizing it and you're seeing it be welcomed and people are getting excited about your ideas. I mean, we see that all the time.
Yeah.
Like when we collaborate within our team and, you know, everybody's like, oh, that's a great idea. Like even leadership's like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. There's no ego involved in it. You know, a lot of those things, but I think normalizing the asking of opinions is probably the most important thing.
Really valuable point. The normalized behavior and also the routine. I love both of those additions you made to this conversation, because I agree. The more it's happening, it becomes more normal. The routine of it makes it less intimidating. It's just how we do things here.
Exactly.
Really great point.
Yeah.
All right. So when value voice is strong in general, we find that people are very comfortable being themselves at work. They just show up as their authentic selves. This survey showed that 65% of people are comfortable doing that. They 65% let their guard down and they can just be themselves in the workplace. And I think that's a respectable number, but that still leaves 1 in 3 people who aren't. So I want to start by just asking, why do you think it's important in general for people to be able to show up and be their authentic selves, not have to mask their true personality or their true style? Why is that important?
I think it's about feeling really, you know, we spend 40, 50, 60 hours of work a week at work. To not feel like you can be yourself, that's a chore. That's exhausting. Like, I don't even know what that would be like. But honestly, I mean, for that reason alone, I mean, you want people to be able to show up as their authentic selves. And part of that showing up as your authentic self is being able to voice your feelings, your opinions. I mean, all of us have those. So if you can't show up and do that, then you're not going to last very long. You're going to find someplace else where you're accepted, because that's about acceptance, right?
It is. I agree.
So, you know, the thing that I think about too is make sure you know, as a leader, the kind of people that fit into this organization. Like who is a good fit? That goes back to hiring, right? I work with one of my clients and they recently hired a woman. She moved across the country to take the job. And I can't tell you how much she's changed the culture. And she's an AE.
In a good way.
She's changed the culture in a good way.
Good way. Okay.
She is showing up. She knows herself and she is authentic as it all get out. And she literally has changed the spirit of the team.
Oh, I love that. So it's contagious in a way.
Yeah. And she's kind of leading others to kind of be their authentic selves. Like it's been kind of amazing actually, but she's really, I think that's the point, is like when people are able to show up as their authentic selves, it just lifts the whole spirit and the whole culture of the organization.
I can see that. So what can be done to improve here? Because I know that doesn't exist for everybody. What recommendations do you have?
That's a tough one. I mean, obviously it's, again, making sure that people are heard, that they are helping to shape the environment. Mm-hmm. Right? That they're allowed to help shape the environment. And there's a lot of things you can do with help having your team, like much like our culture committee, there's a lot of ways to get input from people about the way that they want to show up at work, what they want to see at work, what they need at work. So again, normalizing those questions and asking those questions. You know, much of the work that we do at Up Your Culture, I mean, that is also helping people do this and have these conversations. But I think again, normalizing, allowing people and accepting people for who they are. I mean, I know that sounds, you know, cliche kind of, but it really is that acceptance factor.
It is. More and more we're learning that the more diverse an organization is, and I don't mean diversity in just ethnicity or religion or gender. I mean diverse thinking, diverse backgrounds. You bring different skills and perspectives, you know, the better the organization performs. And that's because of exactly what you're talking about. I also really liked what you said a minute ago, which was there's such an important role in hiring. Right. And when you bring someone on who is a good fit for what you need, let's say you're a fast moving organization. If you bring someone on who also has that intensity, they're fast moving too. They're more likely to be able to show up as their authentic selves. You bring someone on who's highly analytical, someone who's, you know, they think so much before they can act. Now you're asking them to be something that they're not. Right. So I loved that comment you made too. Yeah. Really smart. Okay, so you've heard the term, I know, psychological safety before. It's become quite a buzzword. I imagine a lot of people have now heard the term psychological safety. And a lot of what we're talking about really involves psychological safety, because when you have that, when you feel as though you can, you know, speak your mind, you can be who you are, you can make a mistake or, you know, fall down and get back up and it's all going to be okay. You have an environment of trust, you know, where you can be yourself. And I think this just really affects how employees handle a lot of things, one of which is how they handle mistakes. We all make them. I seem to make more than my fair share of them. But only 90% of employees feel comfortable admitting to the mistakes that they've made. 90 is a big number, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
but I mean, there are still people out there, you know, that's 10% of the people who don't feel comfortable admitting to the mistakes that they've made. So in your experience, what is the downside here, first of all? So what happens when an employee doesn't feel comfortable admitting to their mistakes? What do you see as a result?
Well, I think the downside is it just slows everything down. Like if we can't admit a mistake, if we don't move forward, like if we're hiding it, or if we tell a different story about it, or if we, I mean, that just like, truth will set you free, right? Like it's true. So I think it slows down. It's unnecessary. I'm a big believer of owning my mistakes. Like I'm like, oh, I did that. And I'll be the first one to be like, that was me. I really will, because I feel like I can't get to a solution unless we think, okay, here's the mistake. Now what's the solution? We can't get to the solution piece if we are not owning up to where we misstepped, you know?
Yeah. Well said. So how can managers improve here? How can they encourage more openness so that when an employee makes a mistake, they have that comfort level to come and say, that was me and I need help? How do you make that happen?
I think you model that behavior, right? 100%. I'm not a big fan of perfection. Like I just think that ideal is silly. And again, to your point, we all make mistakes, even though I have a kind of a strong perfection thing, I really have to fight like, no, that's not really true. That's not a thing. I think being open as a leader, being open themselves and modeling the behavior and saying, wow, you know what? I messed that up. I was unclear about that. I'm really sorry. I can see how that must have slowed us down. And that is really hard for some people. It really is. Really hard. And I get that. But I think if you want a fast moving organization, if you want to be solutions based, those are the things that you have to do. If you make a mistake, know that not owning up to it just slows the whole thing down.
That's right.
We can't get to the solution until we're open about, you know, what went wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I, like you, struggle with perfectionism. I want everything to be so perfect. And I used to work with someone who always said to me, and I loved this, she said, progress, not perfection. That's what we need, progress, not perfection.
Yep.
It's a great, great reminder.
And really,
go ahead.
I was just going to say the progress piece, if we aren't forthcoming, if we don't own our mistakes, then we slow down progress.
That's true. There is no progress if you can't improve, build upon. You're exactly right. All right, I want to come back around to the thing that you said jumped off the page for you in the beginning, because that was really striking. And like I said before, one of the most common reasons that companies call on us to help them improve their culture is because they have internal silos. They have something happening that has created a breakdown in communication between departments. So definitely an important thing for us to focus on, a hot button for many organizations out there. Just to restate the statistics, only 23% of the survey respondents reported that departments communicate and collaborate extremely well at their workplace, which is actually down from last year as well. So not only is that a terrible number, but it's lower than it was before. 65%, as you mentioned, believe that there's room for improvement, and 12% say it's a serious problem. And I just think it's really important, and I want to hear from you. What are some best practices that you recommend when working with organizations to help them improve here?
Well, this is, you know, you usually have someone at the top who oversees all departments, right? Mm-hmm. And it's I think a hard line is that it's unacceptable. Like interdepartmental, you know, what am I trying to say? Interdepartmental skirmishes are not acceptable, right? Like that's not okay. And working with leaders, to leaders of all departments, them coming to the table first, because we know it starts at the top. And this is the reason this isn't okay, is because it doesn't, we will never be able to do our best work if we don't work together, like period, right? So then from there, I think you do have to have a, you know, as they say on Seinfeld, an airing of grievances. I think that's important. There's something getting in the way. Usually it's who's the most important department, at least with people that I work with, who's actually running the beast here. It's also, I think, airing of grievances, like what's going wrong with this department, like why aren't you communicating the way that you should, I think is really important. And then I think you have to have buy-in from that leadership to develop a plan to solve those things, right? Knowing that it starts at the top. And if we start to see, if the rest of the team starts to see that leadership's working really hard at this, then there's really no way to not fall in line, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, this department's working well with a department they've never worked well with before, then we're like, oh, okay, we're getting along now. Great. Like we have divorced parents and now they've decided to figure it out. You know what I mean?
Right. Totally.
The other thing too, I think is really important is understanding the job of other departments. Like, I think that's really important. So if I get this to you at the last minute, that affects your job in this way. Right. And maybe having some shadowing and getting a peek behind the curtain of what other people on your team are dealing with and how your behavior might affect their job, or, you know, your, you know, whatever you might be doing that makes their job harder. Like, we need to know that.
I love that. So senior leader at the top needs to set the expectations for this. We are going to get along, and they need to hold everybody accountable to that. And then department leaders, you're saying it really starts with them. They have to begin by the grand gestures, like really reaching out and listening and doing all the things so that the people in their departments follow suit. Love the shadowing idea. I mean, if you spend a day in the shoes of someone in the other department, maybe, I don't know how long you would shadow. Would it be a whole day? Would it be an hour? I don't know, but I mean, you would certainly have your eyes opened to their perspective, which has to help.
It reminds me kind of like this, you're gonna laugh at this, but it reminds me of when my kids were little, we made them both sign a non-aggression pact. And it was really like, these are the things that are unacceptable, you know, no biting, no screaming, no, you know, all of those things. And then these are the things that you can do. These are acceptable apologies that you can do.
Oh, I like that.
But these things are off the table. Like, just because you're brothers and sisters does not mean that you're going to be able to fight like crazy people. And we hung it on the fridge, but we made them both sign it. And that, I kind of, it just clicked in my head. Like, can we come to some agreement about the way initially we're mm-hmm. going to communicate with each other?
I love that. So an airing of the grievances and then a non-aggression pact of some sort. I like it. That's good. Oh, you think parenting doesn't prepare you for the real world out there, huh?
It does.
It definitely does.
Yeah.
Okay. So last question for you, Emily. If you could recommend, and I know there are probably a million things, but if you had to narrow your thinking down to one thing that you would recommend all company leaders do starting tomorrow, right away, to improve in this area of valued voice, what would that one thing be?
Well, I actually came up with three.
Oh, okay, sure.
But I came up with like a pattern, like do this, do this, do this.
That's great.
Okay, so the first thing that I would ask them to do is, you know, find a forum to normalize the behavior of communication, like normalize that behavior. Ask the team what could be improved. Mm-hmm. Ask everybody what could be improved. And that's kind of the town hall. Like we give our, maybe we do our, you know, state of the state, and then we open it up to questions, much like you were talking, like we do. So yeah. Ask the team what could be improved. The second thing is be open to criticism. You're going to get criticized. Mm-hmm. And the best thing to do is to listen to that and not get defensive. That's important because that shuts down a conversation like nothing else. Mm-hmm. The third thing is then take action, right? It's one thing to ask people to be transparent. But if you don't choose to take action on that, there's really no need to even ask.
That's a really good point because you really set yourself up for potential failure if you ask. And then you disregard entirely, it's better if you didn't ask at all. So you got to see it all the way through, don't you?
That's right. And leaders, like I would say valued voice, that communication, especially up the chain where people are not feeling valued, it's not so much that maybe they're not being asked, but there's no action taken, which is the same thing. So if you're asking all day long what people think, but you're not taking any action on it, just don't even ask.
Right. It's better not to. That's exactly right.
Right.
Oh, I really appreciate you spending time with me today. You know, I knew I wanted to have you on an episode so badly, and this was the one for you because you mastered valued voice. You make everyone you talk to really feel heard. It's clear that you value the opinions of others. And you also are so great at sharing your own, even in tough situations. Tough situations, I've seen you step in and say, I've got to just tell you how I feel. And so I was just really thrilled you said you'd be able to do this one. Thank you
so much, Beth. I appreciate you.
And I know all of our listeners are going to find all this information. I'm glad you came up with a three-part ending there because I think that's something they can really put into play right away. So for those listening, you may want to connect with Emily. We're going to drop Emily's LinkedIn information in the show notes so you can connect with her on LinkedIn. I'm also going to add a link to the Engage 2023, the company culture report, so you can dig in yourself. And as we wrap up, just as a reminder, and you all know this, but remember that regardless of what role you play in your company, a strong company culture definitely begins with you. Thanks so much for spending time with us on Culture Over Coffee. If you've enjoyed the conversation, be sure to subscribe and join us for every episode. For more helpful information on the topics of company culture and employee engagement, visit us at upyourculture.com.